Welcome to your Sound Behavior Podcast, all about the stories of how celebrities are born and the journeys of everyday people. Sponsored by Perfection.us and Global Behavior. Now, here is your host, Don Crosby.
Hi, and welcome to episode 31. I want to ask you a question. Do you know anyone who needs a little break in their relationship? And when I say break, I don't mean to have it broken. I mean something to inspire it and to bring the two people together. Or maybe you understand or have a trying to have more understanding and clarity of a teenager. Well, if you are interested in either of those, go to pairfection.us. That's pairfection.us. It's pairfection.us for more information on how to inspire any relationship and work with any teenager. It's just very, very powerful. Now, I've got a special guest today. His name is Tim Connor. I've known Tim for a number of years, but a little bit about Tim is he's a best-selling author, a global speaker and trainer. During his career, Tim has given over 4,000 presentations in 25 countries on a variety of subjects: sales, leadership, management, motivation, relationship topics. And so I'm just honored, Tim, to have you on episode 31 of Sound Behavior. Thank you so much, brother.
Don, it's a privilege too, because my high school football number and when I was in high school was 31. So this is a very, very, very good.
Wow, very cool. Well, you know, Tim, I remember meeting you a number of years ago, and I think I found you on LinkedIn, and I out of the blue I connected with you, called you, see if we could have coffee. And I remember we were sitting there having coffee, and you're a pretty bottom line kind of guy, and he says, so why am I meeting you? Remember that?
Yeah, I sure do. Yeah. We were sitting outside, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, it was great. But seriously, you know, you're very accomplished. I've got one of your books right here that you were so gracious to send me over Christmas. The title is My Age is None of My Business. Powerful book, great book. And Tim, how many books have you written? I know it's over 100, isn't it?
I've written 80 that have been either printed or published, and I've got another 25 or 30 that are in my computer that are in a work of progress right now. I'm not sure which ones I'll do next, but I've got one coming out in 2021.
Nice.
It's called Success and Happiness is an Inside Job. It's all about not looking outside yourself, people, events, money. It's really looking inside, so I'm hoping to get that out in January or February next year.
Well, congratulations. You inspired me to do my book, because when we were sitting there having coffee and we were talking, and I said, you know, I have an idea for a book. And you said something along the lines that, Don, I believe you have a book inside you.
Well, and it's funny. Having been a past member of the National Speakers Association, I had a guy come up to me one time, because I'd at the time maybe written 20 or 30 books. I had at the time 1 million seller. And he says, you're fairly well recognized in this association, this industry. And he said, can I talk to you for a couple minutes? I said, sure. He says, well, I got a book in me. I was wondering if you could help me out. I said, why? So I asked him, I said, is this book in you any good? And he said, well, yeah, it's really, really good. I said, is this book going to help people? Oh, yeah, it's really going to help you. But how many people is this book helping while it's still inside of you? You've been working on it for 3 years. Get the thing done, man. And he says, that's the extent of your help? I said, that's it. I said, I have talked to more people who were going to do something.
Yes, yes.
And that took them years. I don't care if it's lose weight. I don't care if it's write a book. Yeah. I don't care what it is. When are you going to get started? When you die? Give me a break here. I'm sorry.
Well, it's really interesting. I woke up one morning and I looked at the calendar and I said, if I would have started writing my book when I first, recognized that I wanted to write it, I'd have it done already, because a year has gone by. And so I sat down. I'd get up every morning at 4 o'clock and just, power out for a couple hours. But I want to learn about you, because, every person that has the talent, the ability to master the adversity, to, go the extra mile. To achieve such levels, they have a story, and I'd like to learn a little bit about you. What were you like going to school? What were your interests? Can you give me a snapshot of Tim when he was young and had, I assume you had passion back then.
Growing up, I was in 18 schools in 12 years in 7 states. We never lived anywhere longer than 2 years. And so I learned something very early in life was that you have to adjust to situations that you can't control, and you don't point the finger and whine about what you can't control. And our parents, they taught us a lot, but the most important thing that they taught us was, we're going to teach you about failure before you get to be 10 years old, so when it hits you later, you'll be able to handle it.
Wow.
I'll give you one quick example. When I was a sophomore in high school, we were living in Princeton, New Jersey, and that summer I went up to Maine to work at a resort as a pop washer. While I was up there working as a pot washer, my parents moved to Rhode Island. So, I wanted to try for the football team, and so I find out while I'm up there that I'm not going back to New Jersey. I'm going back to Rhode Island, which I'd never been to. And I said to my father, I said, well, you know, if they take out $20 a week out of our salary, if I leave early to come back and try for the football team, I'll lose a few hundred bucks. But if I stay here, you know, I'll make the money, but I'll miss the team. What should I do? He said, it's your decision. I said, come and get me. So he came and got me, and then, you know, I went and things happened. Then that summer, I was going to get my driver's license. I wanted to buy a car. And I had, it was like $200 short. I said to Dad, could you loan me a couple hundred bucks just so I can make up the difference to buy this car? He said, I'm not loaning you $200. I said, well, if I had stayed up here, I would have not had to ask you for the $200. And his response was, that was your decision.
Wow.
The other thing I learned was, Don, that when I was up there as a junior, I didn't know anybody, so I ran for class president. I didn't win, but after 3 weeks, everybody knew who I was. So you have to learn to my it's really simple. When adversity hits, you got two choices: do something about it or point the finger.
Yeah.
They taught us really early. It doesn't matter whether you can control it or not, whether it's the economy, whether it's COVID, it doesn't matter. You have a choice. You know, do something or whine. And they taught us really early to, you can whine, but you know, your decisions are yours. But you also get, you know, when you're 12 years old, you don't have a lot of life experience. But when your parents are teaching you worse decisions with not much education, you get the consequences. So I mean, I've been broke a few times. I've had a lot of things happen to me, but no matter what it is, going back, I mean, I've been in the speaking business for four recessions.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I never blame anybody. I am where I am because of me. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, it's the adversity that really sharpens the ability to go the next step. And sometimes, you know, we need adversity to get us to the next accomplishment. Right.
Well, all my clients. Mm-hmm. I look at a client, for example, when they got millions of dollars coming in the front door, they've got problems, but they don't fix them because they don't need to fix them because they got $1 million coming in the front door.
Mm-hmm.
But when the $1 million stops coming in the front door, all of a sudden, we don't change things, fix things until it's a problem. So I will guarantee you, somebody who out there is overweight. A quick example: I had hip surgery 3 years ago, and they tried to kill me. And I literally came within 5 minutes of death because of that. Then a week later, I had to have open heart surgery.
Tim.
My doctor, I'll never forget Barry, he says, you know what? He says, you've got to lose 40 pounds, dude, because otherwise, if you don't do that, this heart surgery is a waste of time. So sometimes it takes a 2x4 for us to figure out, hey, you know what? We get casual about the dumb things we do in life until we get a 2x4.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's been a few years since I saw you, but I think the last time I saw you, we served together down to the men's homeless shelter. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. So prior to that, you had the experience of doing, what, pots and pans in high school? So that's why you had
I was a pot washer, and then as a result of that, I was a short order cook for a couple of summers, and then I was in and out of, I mean, because I'm paying for my own education. My folks' parents wouldn't pay for it. So over 3 years, I spent one semester in college and then two semesters working to pay for that one semester. And finally, I said, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to graduate from college until I'm like 35. So I joined the Air Force, and it was funny. I went up to Boston and joined the Air Force, but I'm blind in my left eye, and so the guy says, we can't let you in the Air Force. You can't see. I said, can't you just lie and let me in? I said, I don't know what to do with my life here, man. I can't finish college. I don't have any money. He said, all right, I'm going to let you in. So anyway, long story short, they put me in the Air Police, and once a year we had to qualify as sharpshooter with this M1, the 45, the 38, the riot gun.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So I'm on Guam, you know, going through the a yearly qualification for the all these weapons, and the guy, Colonel, says, "You can't hit the broadside of a barn door. How did you get into the Air Force? I have no idea." So instead of guarding airplanes for 12 hours a day for 4 years, I got to work in an office for 8 hours a day for 4 years. So, you know, so being blind in one eye, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal, but it was. If that guy hadn't let me in the office, it let me into the Air Force at that point, I would have had no idea where I would have ended up.
But you know, it's interesting how you persuaded them to take you.
Well, I guess maybe that's when I started my sales career.
I think so, because I have an edge because I know your profile, right?
And yeah, that's true.
And so that is very cool. So what areas? We all have a story about first jobs and trying to, there's that period of time, you know, like the 20s, you know, where you're trying to figure out what it is that you want to do. And people always ask you, what do you want to do? And you say, hey, I don't know, I'm only six, you know, and then they ask you that same question, you're already 25. And it's kind of like we try to determine what that destiny is. Now, so did you, like, when did it come to you that you wanted to, that you had all this potential, all this knowledge to be able to inspire people with words and expression the way you do?
My first job was in insurance, and then I went into advertising, and then I bought a couple of franchises and went broke doing that, and then I went back into the advertising field with a partner. We published a newspaper and in Washington, D.C., a business newspaper, and we had like 10, 15 employees, and we were growing broke. It was really mm-hmm. tough, but I used speaking as a method of getting people to purchase advertising, so mm-hmm. but I also used speaking as a technique for helping people to, you know, for us to get exposure from a promotion. So I probably from about 1970 to probably 1981, I did 1,000 free speeches, mm-hmm. mostly nice. Rotary clubs, Lion clubs, uh-huh. and stuff like that. Uh-huh. Well, it was in 1981, I was speaking to the Hyannis, Massachusetts Rotary Club, a couple hundred people. This guy comes up, he says, "Well, your message is amazing. We'd love to have you come into our organization and speak. What would you charge for a day?" And I said, "I don't know. I've never gotten paid. I do this for free." He said, "Well," mm-hmm. he said, would you take $2,000? I said, "Sure." A week later, I'm speaking to a Baltimore Kiwanis club, and this guy comes up. He says, "I love your message, man." And it's the same message. I only had one message for
10
years.
Okay.
He says, "I love your message. Would you be willing to, can we pay you?" I said, "What would you pay?" He said, "I don't know." I said, "We'd like you to do an all-day seminar. I said, would you take $3,000? I went back and told my partner, "Here's a quarter. You own the business. I'm going to go speaking full-time."
What a great start. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
And it was basically, you know, and that was tough because back in those days, I actually started speaking full-time before the National Speakers Association started, and it was when Zig Ziglar was a nobody. Mm-hmm. So I was basically at the same time. So it took 5, 6, 7 years to really get going. Mm-hmm. And then I finally wrote my first book in 1981, and I sent it out to about 40 or 50 publishers and got rejection mm-hmm. letters from every one of them. So I decided to self-publish it. And then mm-hmm. 10 years later, Source Book says, "We love your book. We'd like to publish it." And I said,
"Wow.
Wait a minute. I have 300 rejection letters that said it wasn't any good. Well, you were just ahead of your time." I said, "Okay, fine. Whatever." So, and then I had the fortune to sit at a bar with Og Mandino, one of my heroes.
You're kidding.
He says, "You know what?
That doesn't." I have to stop you. Yeah. That doesn't happen, Tim.
I know. It's what we call God winks.
Yes.
Anyway, long story short, I'm sitting at the bar. I've written one book, haven't written anything in 10 years. He said, "You're a great writer, man. You got to start writing in other genres." I said, "What are you talking about?" Because he wrote the self-help fiction stuff. Mm-hmm. He was a master.
Yeah.
So anyway, I went home and I wrote my first self-help fiction book, and I dedicated it to him, and he died 10, 15, 20 years ago. But uh-huh. because uh-huh. of him, he opened the floodgate for me, and after I wrote that first self-help fiction book, then within probably 5 years, I wrote 10 or 15 books on a variety of topics. So sometimes
that's
it
incredible.
Just takes either the right inspiration from someone, the right confidence, the mm-hmm. right support, or the right tubo we buy for. And, you know, mm-hmm. You never know for sure, but God does, so I just trust him all the time.
Yeah, no, that's very well put. And timing is just so important. It's just that one person may say that one thing at the right time, and internally it just connects all the dots.
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite, I read two books a week. I have my entire life, and half of them are fiction, half are self-help, and I won't go through all the titles, but one of my favorites is by Ortberg, and he says it's all going back in the box, and one of the things he talks about is just because God closes a door doesn't mean you have to go through the first one that opens, mm-hmm. and just because you've got five open doors, you don't have to try all five. So, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of, you know, it's like a partnership to mm-hmm. me. I do my part, but my job is not to do his part, and his job is not to do my part, but mm-hmm. but I have to be willing to do my part, which is the effort, the time, the sacrifice, the pain, whatever it takes to get there. One of my most popular topics that I talk about is adversity and failure, mm-hmm. and I have the right to talk about it because I, generally speaking, have had more of a failure than anybody in the audience. Mm-hmm. I've proven that with experiences, and they say to me, well, why should we pay you to come in here and talk about failure when you're not successful? I said, well, then don't pay me. I don't care.
So let's talk about that pain, because there's probably a fair number of people that are listening to this broadcast, and we're going through some tough times. You know, businesses are really, really struggling. Relationships are relationships were difficult prior to the COVID-19. Homeschooling. Parents trying to juggle jobs and kids. And so there's a lot of stress. There's a lot of pain. And a lot of people that maybe listen to this, Tim, are wondering, well, you know, how do I get through it? You know, and maybe we could talk to them just for a few minutes. What would you suggest? What's some of your pain?
Well, you have a choice. It's grow or groan. Basically, it's that simple. I mean, when you whine, complain, and point the finger, that doesn't change anything or fix anything, and all you're going to do is stay stuck in that. I've been there, trust me. So I'm not preaching to anybody. I'm just telling you personal experience.
It hurts.
Whether it's divorce, whether it's failure, whether it's being broke. I mean, I've been there with everybody. Mm-hmm. And I've been there in the last year with my career. Mm-hmm. But my philosophy is very simple. Don't take this wrong, but I've preached for years. God says, you know, He never gives you stuff you can't handle. I'm thinking, God, He gives me stuff I can't handle every day, but He never gives me stuff that He can't handle. So my job, basically, is take what's given to me and learn from it in some way. Let's take homeschooling. I want to be a neurosurgeon when I was in high school and college. If we keep homeschooling, I don't mean homeschooling, but I mean virtual mm-hmm, learning. Mm-hmm. If kids today spend most of their time learning from the computer, trust me, this is going to be the dumbest generation in the history of this country. Mm-hmm. People don't learn by watching a screen. And there's nothing wrong with virtual meetings when you share information, but mm-hmm. from a learning perspective, that is not an effective way to learn. Mm-hmm. And so, and I'm not going to go into that because we could go on for days. But we're stuck with that. You have a single family person who's got a job, and the kid's got 5-8 years old. Has got to be learning. I get it, but I have been in the pit long enough to know that staying mentally in the pit, that is mm-hmm. the issue. I've been in it financially. I've been in it physically. I mean, that's why I wrote my age is none of my business, because I spent 2 months in rehab after my open heart surgery. And I'm thinking, I met one guy in rehab in 2 months, Herb. He said, I got to get out of here. I said, he's 88 years old. He said, I got to get out of here. I said, Herb, what's your rush? He said, man, I got things to do and places to go and people to see. Everybody else in the wheelchairs couldn't wait to get home and die. So it's just really, Donnie, it's your perspective on how you choose to interpret and define what's happening. It's not what's happening.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect.
At least that's my opinion anyway.
Yeah, that's perfect. But you know, when you've got, you know, you have two parents, they're both working, and and I think one of the biggest trials is, you know, you have a lifestyle, right? So you get the house, you get the cars, you fit in all the furniture, you get the 2, 3, 4 kids, and then you get all the sports and all the activities, and then you get a massive change in the economy, and all of a sudden everybody has to change their buying habits, somewhat maybe eating habits. I mean, everything changes, and a lot of people just they don't have the behavior to change so abruptly. do you think?
Well, I've been there. My favorite cars, I've had five 500 little Mercedes 500 SL convertibles. I bought all of them, you know, used, never a new one. Mm-hmm. And my, in my last, I said, I'm wondering if I'm a different person when I'm behind the wheel of a $150,000 car. So you know what I did? I sold it, and I bought a 15-year-old Mercury that was looked like a hearse. And I will tell you, you know, because when I was behind the wheel of that car, whether no matter what it was, I wasn't me. I was a different person. It just, wow. I let that create some arrogance in me. And when I was sitting behind the wheel, I'll never forget, I went up to pick up this gal on a blind date. She wouldn't come with me because if my friends see me with you in that old car, they're going to. I said, not a problem, hon. I kept that Mercury for 3 years before I finally got over this fact that, you know what, I am not the car I drive. And at the same time that I downsized into a 350 square foot apartment, I'm thinking, you know what, I want to spend my final years doing stuff, not having stuff. Because having stuff does
you can't
not
take
it
with you.
Who you
no,
are.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. But sometimes those lessons are learned the hard way.
I know. I realize. I'm not preaching. It's not easy. Yeah. No matter what a person's circumstances are, I've been there. Both health, relationships, marriage. I could go on for hours with it. But I also know this: you got a choice, man. You can whine or you can work.
Yeah, yeah. And what it is that there's a part of the pain process, there's a grieving process. And some people can let it go quicker and get the grieving completed, or they hang on to it, and then it manifests itself into becoming a part of them, their story that they just can't let go of. And I think you're talking about, get it, recognize what happened, get done with it, and move on and grow from it, right?
Well, you know, I could summarize an all-day seminar on stress in one sentence. Stress is not what's happening to you. It's how you react to what's happening to you. A wedding causes stress, and a funeral causes stress. A promotion causes stress, and winning the lot and going bankrupt causing stress. Mm-hmm. The mind looks at all of them the same. They are stressful indicators. So the bottom line is you have to decide. It's not what's happening. Again, it's how you choose to respond to it. And the mm-hmm. problem is what most people do is when they stay stuck in the pain, what they don't realize is, it's really simple, Dom. The number one contributor to death is, contributor, not cause, is stress. Mm-hmm. The number one contributor to stress is impatience. Mm-hmm. And the number mm-hmm. one contributor to impatience is control. Mm-hmm. So if you think you have the ability or the right to control most stuff in life, all you're doing is killing yourself.
Now I want you to slow down a little bit. You know why? Because your content is really terrific. And I want people to be able. Some people may be taking notes. I hope they have shorthand because you're really sharing some good stuff, brother.
Well, I've been there. I mean, I had one time I was going through a stressful period in my life, and the doctor said, "Well, I'll give you some pills." I said, "Is that going to solve the problem?" He said, "No, it'll just help you manage it." I said, "Well, mm-hmm. not that." So, and as long as I keep taking the pills, the problem is there. He said, "Yeah." Well, I said, "Well, I'm not really fixing it." He said, "Well, not really." I said, "Then I don't want the pills. You know, mm-hmm. help me figure out how to fix it, change mm-hmm. it, not mm-hmm. just, you know, make it so I can't notice it." And this is true with doesn't matter, drugs, alcohol, it doesn't matter, stress. It is a killer, regardless of whether it's positive stress or negative stress.
Yes.
What people realize it all comes back to the need, and this is where we are today in society with technology, with everything. It's all about control. Waiting online on a telephone, waiting in line at a store. Everybody thinks that the world. A quick story: I was beeped at three times this morning because I wasn't driving fast enough, and I have a lot of life mantras, and one of them is I was not put on this earth for your control. Mm-hmm. And if we're driving down a highway at 50 miles an hour, and that's a speed limit, just because you're in a hurry mm-hmm. doesn't mean I have to be in a hurry.
Yeah.
Sorry, dude. You know, and this is where we are in today's world. Yeah. Everybody is so frustrated and stressed out because of what's happening, and I get it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, mm-hmm. if you go back 200 or 300 years or 2,000 or 3,000 years, there's been stuff like this in the past. Let's just quiet down, relax, chill, get stronger, and get wiser, and we can handle it. But we'll never be able to handle it if we stay in a finger-pointing, stressful mode, trust me.
Yeah, yeah. And part of the issue, too, is that people take everything so personally, right? You can do something wrong on the road, and all of a sudden it becomes road rage because, you know, you've maybe turned or did something unintentionally, but all of a sudden it's a personal vendetta. And they're angry. They want to run you off the road. They're swearing at you. Where's
but,
it
you know, it's not just, it's just on the road. When I'm standing in front of 500 or 1,000 people for 3-4 hours, you know, I know sooner or later I'm going to say something that offends somebody, because not because it offends them, because they just don't agree with it or don't like it. So I tell every audience, you know what, I am not, was not put on this earth for approval. So if I say something that offends you, you have a right. You can take it personally, but I have a right to my opinion just like you do. But it, just because your opinion is different than mine doesn't mean yours is right. I deal with this every single time I deal with an audience.
Yeah.
Everybody goes through everything thinking that because of what they've learned, who they are, that they're smarter than or right than. All conflict, Don, is my definition of, I have to defend my opinions, even though they might not be wrong, but they just happen to be mine. So now, and this is where political correctness is going today.
Yeah.
We're getting to the point where we're not going to be able to ask somebody how they are, or whether they like the sun or the weather, because sooner or later, everything is going to offend somebody. We need to get over it, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. You know, I was a few years ago, I was speaking for a day, and I had, I don't know, just short of 400 people. And I was watching people come in. And for the most part, just a lovely group of people. They seemed happy and just wonderful, wonderful folks. But then I noticed another small group of people come in, and they were cursing, and they weren't happy. And all their gestures were very negative. And got all done. Day went well, I thought. All the reviews came in. Terrific. I mean, beautiful reviews. Tim, you'd have been so proud. All except for maybe 12. And I go, wow, how can you have all those great reviews and then have 12 negatives? Well, it's just those 12 people that came in together. So that's right. You come in, it doesn't change.
It's what I call the 1%. We all have to take our shoes and clothes off airports now because 12 people want to blow up a couple of buildings. You know, at Christmas time, one person puts up a Merry Christmas sign, and now the city says you can't put Merry Christmas signs. And one kid wears a certain T-shirt to school, and now because one person is offended by that, that means nobody can wear a certain T-shirt anymore. We're letting the 1% of society control the 99% of us, both politically, spiritually, and from a communication perspective, and it's a dangerous place that, you know, and people need to realize that you have a right to your opinion. It doesn't mean you're right. It just means you have a right to your opinion, and that's what's really important today.
Yeah, and I wish you could broadcast that on the news, because there's so much anger. There's so much, heaven forbid if you try to talk about anything that's sensitive at the dinner table. You know, Thanksgiving's coming up, Christmas down the road. You know, trying to talk about certain subjects is just a no-no, where it used to be fine, right? But now it's just there's anger.
I have a favorite phrase. If I was in the media, or if I got the opportunity to interview a politician or a media person, no matter what they said, I wouldn't care what it was. My first question would be, how do you know that? And I tell all my audiences, I will guarantee somebody you have a conversation with today says something that is an opinion that is supposed to influence you. So just try the simple question, how do you know that? And I would inspire your listeners. The first chance you get when somebody says, I don't care if it's your spouse, your kids, whatever they say, no matter what it is, try the question, how do you know that? And watch what happens next. All you're going to get next is more opinions about how they think they know that. It's really hysterical, trust me.
I'm writing it down. I love it. How do you know
it? Just try with me, for example. When I say something about X, I say, Tim, how do you know that? And all of a sudden, now I have to come up with some proof. I don't have any proof. I don't have any evidence. So I'll just give you some more opinions.
Oh, that's powerful. I love it. Well, you know, 30 minutes runs by pretty quick. What?
I talk too much. I apologize.
Oh, no. You make my job really easy, because talking about what I love, Tim, are the stories of people that have been successful and been there, done that. And too often, you know, there's a large population that looks at people that have been there and done that as being, well, who are they? They don't know anything. But they don't understand the beauty of the journey, the person experienced, the pain, along with the joy and the celebrity status. You know, people, it's just missing.
This is why I love to talk to strangers on airplanes and at airports and restaurants. I do it all the time, wherever I am. I just start a conversation. Some people want to have that conversation. Some people don't, and it's okay. I mean, I was getting on a plane last year coming back from Oklahoma City, and I asked the flight attendant. She looked like she was in her early 50s. I said, do you date old guys? And she said, yeah, but not as old as you. And then for the next 2.5 hours, you know, she's laughing, and she said, I've had more fun with you as a passenger than anybody. So anyway, I said, what the heck? So I said, well, if I change the question, would you change your answer? She said, how are you changing the question? I said, do you date old rich guys? She said, yes. So 2 weeks later, I'm flying home from Dallas. I'm thinking, this works. I'm going to try it. So I asked the flight attendant, do you date old rich guys? And she went on me for 5 minutes. You don't have a right to talk to me that way. You're rude. You know, there's playful people, Don, and there's not playful people. And what I've learned over the years is if I have a chance to talk to someone who is playful and fun, I'm going to talk to them. If not, I'll find somebody else. It's really that simple.
Well, you know, and the beauty there, Tim, the way I see it, is that every time that we meet someone, and that's one of the things with traveling that I attempt to accomplish, is that I try to make a difference in someone's life. Maybe it's to make them smile, maybe it's to make a gesture, something, find something about them to compliment them on what they wear, how they're acting, if they're doing a good job, you know, give them a well-deserved compliment, you know, make... You know, go out of your way to help people get, because you never know what someone's going through. You just never know.
And I was flying home from Missouri 2 weeks ago from one of my speaking engagements this year, and the lady I was talking to, it was a nurse, recently fired. Terrible story. And we talked for a couple hours. She said, you know what? This meeting was synchronous. It was just possible. I said, I don't know. I mean, you never know who needs what and when, but if we don't have the right heart, the right mission, the right purpose in life, you know, sometimes it can be a simple smile, it can be a simple hello, or a simple can I help you? I don't care if you're walking down the aisle in Target
Absolutely.
Or Harris Teeter. You'd never know when somebody was. My goal is to end this day laughing and making somebody else laugh before it's over.
Gosh, I love it. Well, you know, Tim, that summarizes our conversation really well. I think you nailed it.
I can't thank you enough for the opportunity and privilege of doing this with you, Don. I've always respected you, and I appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I've been inspired by you. You've made a deposit in my life on many occasions. So I don't go away because I want to talk to you a little bit. But so I want to thank everybody because this concludes another episode. And if you haven't, please consider subscribing because I have an amazing list of future guests just like Tim. I mean, we've got some folks coming up that and listen to Tim, listen to his remarks, come back and listen to it two or three times or share it with people because the inspiration. Within this conversation, you don't know what it can do to touch someone else's life. So thank you for joining us. And remember, slow down so you can learn about the stories of how celebrities are born and the journeys of everyday people.
You've been listening to Don Crosby and your Sound Behavior Podcast, sponsored by Perfection.us and Global Behavior. If you would like to become a special guest, get a copy of Don's book, or simply share Sound Behavior on social media, go to soundbehavior.com. That's soundbehavior.com.